Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about community and workplace organizing. Our guest, Keith Kelleher, was the founder of United Labor Unions Local 880 from 1983 to 5, and SEIU Local 880, and then president, sorry, I missed the dates there, 85 to 2008, and then president from 2008 to 2017 of SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Kansas. This was once the smallest local union and now is the largest local union in Chicago, Cook County, the state of Illinois, and the Midwest, as well as the seventh largest local of the 2 million member SEIU Service Employees International Union. Keith has also served as an international vice president of SEIU. Keith Kelleher, welcome to Talk World Radio.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for inviting me.
So can you explain a little bit for people who don't know this union and its history and its relationship with the place I used to work when I worked with you, and that was Acorn?
Yeah, sure. I actually started out in an Acorn organizing drive in a neighborhood on the southwest side of Detroit in 1979. And at that time, I was actually an Acorn member. I was with a group called the Jesuit Volunteer Corps, and we were, I was working in a food bank in Chicago, in Detroit at the time. And organizer knocked on our door in our Jesuit volunteer house and asked us to join Acorn. So we did, and that's how I got involved with Acorn. And then as I was involved with Acorn in the neighborhood group and various campaigns, some of them against environmental racism, empty lots, you know, just a lot of things that were hitting Detroit neighborhoods at the time. No housing, terrible housing, abandoned homes. I heard that Acorn was organizing a union of fast food workers. And I thought, wow, that sounds pretty cool. And I signed on for that. And they then went from organizing fast food workers to organizing all low-wage workers and basically in industries that most unions at that time were, did not or would not organize. And so we organized fast food workers, low-wage shops, et cetera, in Detroit until I moved to Chicago and started organizing home health care workers, again, with United Labor Unions, which a lot of people just saw as Acorn's union.
Yeah.
And we started organizing home health care workers in Detroit in 84, 83, 84. And then eventually nationally, the five locals of United Labor Unions affiliated with SEIU for a lot of different reasons, but mainly because of resources and to fund the organizing that we wanted to do in industries that SEIU wanted to organize in too. SEIU wanted to organize, we wanted to organize, and they brought us some much needed resources. And so then we were able to go after the home health care industry and eventually child care industry in Chicago.
For people who don't know about home health care workers and child care workers, it sounds like a very difficult industry to organize.
Yeah, it's not like a factory, you know, it's not like a factory or a building where people work. It's people work in, at that time when the companies we were organizing, we had estimated like 3,000 workers in 3,000 different settings. So in order to get in touch with the workers, you had to either go to where they picked up their checks. Many of them went to their companies once every 2 weeks, sometimes once a week to pick up their checks. And we would be able to meet people there, or when they were at their in-service training, they were required to do trainings. And what they did is they went out and they took care of people as alternative to institutionalization of seniors and people with disabilities. You might remember at in the 70s, there was a big, in the 60s, there was a big move to deinstitutionalize people who were in these large state hospitals, nursing homes, things like that, or to stop them from going into a nursing home. And so state bureaucrats came up with this idea of doing home care, which had been around in some forms for like 40 or 50 years. Myself, when we were a family of five, eventually eight, living in a little two-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn, the Sisters of the Sick Poor used to come in to take care of my grandmother, who was dying of colon cancer. And they did a lot of the things that traditional home care workers do, bathing, changing dressings, feeding, cleaning up the home, shopping, everything, anything and everything. And so I had that connection that I didn't really put together until I started organizing home care workers and realizing, wow, that was sort of like the beginnings of what eventually today is a huge multi-billion dollar industry in the private sector and a huge government program in the public sector. But at the time, they weren't as big as they are now. So you probably see people, or you may have a relative or a friend, or you see folks at the bus stop who are dressed in their whites or in their medical uniforms who are going. They are most likely a home care worker who's going to take care of somebody in their home as an alternative to institutionalization or a hospital or whatever. Or if they've been released from a hospital and not been through rehab. So that's what the home care industry is. And it's at the time, minimum wage ruled, actually sub minimum wage ruled. And people just made, at the time that I started organizing, federal minimum wage was $3.35 an hour. And that was what the pay was. $3.35, maybe $3.50, $3.75 after 5, 10, or 15 years, if you were there that long. And no insurance, no benefits, no paid holidays, no paid vacations. You just got that check and that was it. And at the same time, they were going into people's homes and cleaning, caring for them. I mean, the industry was terrible. I mean, workers would come to the organized committee meetings talking like how they would have to bring their own cleaning supplies, bandages, all kinds of medical, not any devices, but like gauze and clean, antiseptic and alcohol and things like that, just to care for their client because there was nothing. The state just didn't want them in state hospitals, they didn't care really what was happening once they just weren't on their rolls anymore in a state hospital or a nursing home. And so it was really workers going blind into homes where people, hadn't been cared for, in some cases, the most extreme cases, they had bed sores or in their own waste, and they had to do things like changing feeding tubes and, changing people's clothes and diapers and cleaning and toileting, and and cooking, shopping, and in some cases helping them with their finances. It was a very hard, stressful job, and people usually would have several clients in a day or a week, and they would just travel between clients. And they were off the clock when they traveled. So if you had a client on the south side in the morning for 2 or 3 hours, then you had to take a train and a bus to the west side for an hour, hour and a half. That's your own time. You didn't get paid.
Yeah.
And then once you got there and you clocked in, you had to sign in. The client had to sign that you were there. Sometimes people then went to a third client, because some clients only got an hour or two of service a day. So it was huge. Really, a lot of members at membership meetings would equate. Many people had just moved up from the South in the prior 10 or 20 years,
Yeah.
from Mississippi or Arkansas or Alabama, and they would equate it to sharecropping. That I'm bringing all my labor, my tools,
Yeah.
my skills to care for somebody, and I get nothing except minimum wage. I don't get paid in travel and time. I don't get paid the bus fare. I don't get paid mileage if I have to use my car. So that was anyway, that was what the industry looked like.
And
So,
so
and it
Keith
was, and it was
Kelleher,
growing by leaps and bounds.
Keith Kelleher, what is it like now, after some decades, and what have the unions had to do with changing the situation?
It was all, as I write in the article, it was all out of house visiting and visiting workers. Either we would meet people at their check pickup, or some people knew other workers, or some people lived in the same public housing development. So we would visit them and then bring people together for what was called an organizing committee meeting to see if people wanted to vote to organize. And they did in most cases. And we went forward to either a union election or direct recognition. Or in the case of the state of Illinois, people were considered independent contractors, so they had no rights under labor law to organize. So we basically used our ACORN community organizing skills and built groups by zip code and neighborhood of home care workers, and just kept slamming the state for 15, 20 years for raises in wages and benefits. And eventually we won the right to have a union. Organizing, I'm sorry, a union to win union recognition by changing the state collective bargaining act, and including home care workers under that, and we were able to win that election and then negotiate a contract. So today, whereas when we started, it was all 335 to maybe 350, 375 an hour, which was the minimum wage with 335 for under Reagan, it was 335 for 8 years, 10 years. Until George H.W. Bush and the Democrats raised it in 1990, I believe. So it was 335 for most of the first 5 to 10 years we were organizing, and that's all the wages were when people were organizing, except when we went to the state capitol and won increases. So for today, I was just looking at the contracts, home care workers in Chicago now, the folks under state programs are at $18.50 an hour. And have a health plan coverage covers about 30 or 40,000 home care, child care, public sector and private sector workers now. They have good health care, which they never had, training classes, gloves, even things like, you think gloves, well, shouldn't they have gloves? They didn't have gloves then. Nobody was given, today it's called personal protective equipment. Gloves, masks, things like that. People never had that. Today, as part of the contract, people get that. They have paid holidays, paid time off, paid vacations, whereas never had any of that. And again, it's not everyone under the contract because there's certain hourly requirements, but most folks now have the wages have gone up, you've heard, from 335 to now an average of, I'm sorry, a starting, I believe, is 18 in the public sector. And they are shooting for eventually to get to 20. That's their new goal, is to get to $20 an hour. So it's been a huge improvement, but it's still not, what everybody wants or needs to live on, but it has been improved greatly. One of the best things in my life was I was sitting on a stage with one of our members once, and we were just talking before a rally was going to start against the Republican governor who was trying to take away the health insurance that workers had won. And I was sitting with her and I sat there and she said, I said, well, how's the, what's the best thing about the union to you? And she said, the best thing about me, she said, is I used to have to sit at the county all day. I'm a cancer survivor and I think she had lung cancer at the time I was talking to her, but still working. She was, she was going through chemo. And she said the union card, the health card, has allowed me to stay alive the last 5 years. Because before I had to go to the county, and don't get me wrong, she said the county was great coverage. It's just that you had to wait so long to see a doctor or to get, and especially if you needed chemo or services like that, it was much harder to get. And Medicaid was much stricter then, before Obamacare. And then when we had won our health plan, that had allowed her to get not only her and thousands, if not tens of thousands of other home care and child care providers were able to get good health care, whereas before, at best, they could go to the county, And the county was great service, it just wasn't well funded, and you had to wait a long time to get service.
What was the relationship between these organized workers and the organized community activists in ACORN? I can remember coming to Chicago a number of times, a lot going on with both of those groups, and I remember an Acorn National convention in Chicago where we had big demonstrations for immigrants' rights. We went up north of town and put up wanted posters and visited the front doors of the predatory banking executives and all sorts of activities. How did the labor union or relate with Acorn?
I mean, we were, sister organizations, our response was always that we share an office and a philosophy. And but it was a lot much more than that. We turned out people to each other's campaigns. When Acorn was squatting in abandoned homes, we went with them. We actually had some of our members were squatters in some abandoned homes. Some of our members actually had one abandoned not abandoned home, but had one homes that were fixed up because of that campaign and had decent places to live. We had done campaigns against the predatory lenders, which allowed our members to go through the Acorn loan counseling program, which allowed them to get a loan to get their own homes on the south side, south suburbs, west side of Chicago, whereas they were all renters before then. And they could get a house for the price of what their rent had been before because of those programs. I mean, there was that, but also working on stuff bigger than just us. So, for instance, Acorn, Chicago Acorn's living wage campaigns here in the city of Chicago. That raised the minimum wage in Chicago for certain city programs, then forced a discussion at the state level and a campaign to raise the state minimum wage, which helped our members, right? Because before that, most states just, if they did, they would just follow the federal minimum wage law, right? But many southern states don't even do that. Many southern states, the not many now. I think most are probably at 725, which is the federal minimum now. But in those days, a lot of states had their minimum at, 250 or less, because they didn't have to raise it. And we were able to move campaigns to raise the state minimum wages that then forced the state to raise the wages into home care and childcare providers and hundreds of thousands of other low-wage workers in Illinois. So now the minimum wage in Illinois, whereas when we started was 3.35, minimum wage in Illinois, I believe, went to 15. I think it's on its way. It's a force that was passed in 2018 when Pritzker won. And I think it's around 14 or 15 now, and then it goes to 16. And same thing with the city of Chicago. I believe city of Chicago's at 16 something. Plus they want a tipped minimum. So these are campaigns that not only directly benefited our members in our neighborhoods and Acorn members, but also benefited the entire community. And we got involved in politics where a lot of people didn't, which is the, subject of the art, an article I recently wrote for Convergence magazine about our involvement in Jesse Jackson's campaigns and Mayor Washington's campaigns. Jesse in 1984 and 88 for president. Reverend Jackson, I'm sorry, in 1984 and 88 for president, and Harold Washington in 1987 when he won his second term for mayor. And it was the, I sort of profile some of the people who were attending his rallies and some of the leaders who actually did the voter registration. Because many times, reporters, again, because they're, I don't know, short time period, whatever, don't go into a subject and they just do the big, like Reverend Jackson came to town and a million people got, registered to vote, It's like, we wish says what happened. And definitely sparked a lot of voter registration. But there was a lot of door-to-door mass-based voter registration that happened that our members were involved in both 84 and 88. And we were one of our members, Irma Sherman, actually ran as a delegate to the Democratic National Convention on the Jesse Jackson slate. And that caused a lot of doors that had been closed to Black and Brown and women voters to be open, both with his campaign in 72 as well as the campaign in 80 and 80, I'm sorry, 84 and 88. And we were very involved in that. And so that's what the article was about the S.E. Stinson. S.E. was a great leader who actually, in the beginning of the article that I wrote, is leading a march to one of Reverend Jackson's first rallies here in Chicago, and talks about how she had been involved in organizing her company, which was a 400 worker company called Staff Builders Services Incorporated. Staff Builders at that time was one of the largest temporary services companies in the world. And they did all different industries. They did industrial, and they also did home care. And these 400 workers would go out every day and take care of folks. And they got $3.35, and Staff Builders from the state of Illinois got $6.40 an hour for one service and $7 an hour for another service, and then turned around and paid the workers, barely half, not even half in some cases, of that amount of money, and then they pocketed the rest. So you can figure the math yourself. 400 people going out every day to see two and three clients, that's several thousand clients, and then them getting $3, $4 an hour off of every hour those folks worked. They're skimming off the top. And it was, in many ways, what our members called it, sharecropping, except it was with people as opposed to land. And workers, that's one of the most powerful parts of the organizing campaigns, was when we would talk about how much money the company was making per hour versus how much money you were making per hour. And everyone would take out their paychecks and look at it and say, "You mean the company is making 630, 650 an hour for every hour I work, and this I'm getting this?" And then when, once the taxes were taken out and everything, it was like, nothing, and it was just people really got incensed and wanted to organize, so. But not only that, we always, like, as we used to say, probably, I don't like using sports terms, but punched above our weight in politics. In 1984, when Reverend Jackson first announced he was running for president, we didn't even have one union contract. We had a small unit. We had just one of 200 workers. But because we were working with Acorn, and Acorn had formed the union, we were able to get involved in campaigns like that. And some of the National United Labor Union staff, some of these folks you may know, went on actually to work for, took a leave of absence to work for Reverend Jackson's campaign and build labor support for Jackson in 84 and 88. It
Keith
was
Keller
historic, and our, and his, huh?
Keith, if you can hear me, you've mentioned your articles, and I want to let people know we're going to have links to Keith Kelleher's articles up at talkworldradio.org. One is called "How Black and Brown Women in Chicago Helped Build Jesse Jackson's Campaigns." Another is "How Mass-Based Community Unions Could Transform the Country." And another interesting one from back when Mamdani was elected in New York is called "The Coming Storm in New York," that has now been coming. But I wanted to say, Acorn, for those who remember it, was largely destroyed by a scam, by a media scam, and is largely gone, at least in name. But what is your reckoning of the legacy? Because there was so much good work done and so much good that's lasted beyond
I mean,
Acorn.
there's so many things that Acorn was involved in and was responsible for that a lot of people just don't know about. I mean, just in the labor side, okay, for instance, we started organizing home care workers when very few, there were several locals. I don't want to say we were the only ones. 1199 in New York, one SEIU local on the West Coast, an independent union on the West Coast, were organizing home care workers. But what our legacy is, and what 880 did, was we successfully built a model to organize the Medicaid programs under the community services under the Medicaid program. And that today, when we first started organizing, maybe nationally under contract unions had 30 to 50,000 home care workers in 1983, 84. And many of them were not under contract. They were just represented. And because of the model, we were able to develop and help export to other SEIU locals, as well as other ACORN offices, too, who were organizing childcare providers before SEIU was. Today, SEIU represents over 750,000 home care workers across the country in 15 different states. So SEIU, which has about 2 million members, one third of the people that they represent is a home care worker. Okay. So that's one. And number two is home child care providers who care for children in their homes, as opposed to storefronts or whatever. They take care of kids in their homes. In Illinois alone, when we first started organizing, there were 50,000 home child care providers caring for about 200,000 children in their homes across Illinois. And they got anywhere from six to like, I think $10, $12 a day at the time for each child. Well, again, do the math. You can't live on that, right? But the state was just trying to pawn this off. They just didn't want responsibility for, especially for low-income children, low and moderate-income children. We saw that and started organizing those folks using the same tactics. And that's what the community unions article is about, is how we organized in by neighborhood across the state of Illinois. And won an election of 50,000 home child care providers. Today, SEIU represents, I believe it's 150 to 200,000 home child care providers across the country. So that's on top of the, 600,000 to 700,000 home care workers, and has brought huge changes. Again, it's not a middle class job, or upper middle class job. But it is much better than it was, with, in most cases, health insurance, living wages, regular raises, cost of living increases, personal protective equipment. And, one thing that I'm personally proud of is that we started a thing called the Helen Miller Education and Training Center here way back in the 1980s. That was just to allow help people get their GEDs and things like that. That training center, which is affiliated with SEIU Healthcare, which is the union I helped found, every year trains 30 to 40,000 home care and child care providers to provide life-saving care to the homebound seniors and people with disabilities, so that they can have a life in their home, and so they could work in many cases, especially people with disabilities who still want to work. The home care workers allow them to work. And this program pays them to be trained through our training center. So that's one of the programs that we run in the union that I'm very proud of. And that is just, I retired in 2018, so I can't take credit for it, but I was one of the ones who helped
Well, you deserve a
develop
lot
it.
of credit, and I wish we could go on and on and on, but we don't have any minutes left. It's
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
wonderful, wonderful accomplishments. We're going to have links up at talkworldradio.org. We've been speaking with Keith Kelleher, who was president of Local 880 of SEIU and international vice president of SEIU. Keith, thanks for everything you've been doing and for coming on Talk World Radio.
Great. Thank you very much. Happy to be on. Thank you.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.